It's the April of Alex all month long on Rounding Down with Chid.
Inside.
We're here to talk with Alexes. The Alexes you know, the Alexes you love, the Alexes you wish you knew, the Alexes you want to love, the Alexes that you want to spend time with. They're here, they're family, and when you're here, you're family. And this is the Alex Garden. Alex Garden, April, right here on Rounding Down.
Welcome to Rounding Down, the only Allotropers and Bad Person podcast that dares ask what is good and what is bad. I'm Chid, the Allotropers and Bad Person. Good question. I'm joined as usual by my co-host, the one, the only, the person who did not get a COVID vaccine today. It's Scifietti.
I didn't get one. It's not that I don't want to. I just don't qualify.
I know you're an anti-vaxxer, and that's fine. Listen, I support. As I've said before, I'll platform anyone on this show. As long as I don't have to worry about booking, I will give anyone a platform, even if I strongly disagree with what they're saying.
Chid, I have a question for you.
Yeah. Is it about how vaccines install Microsoft in your veins?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Nothing to do with vaccines.
Okay.
If we were in 16th century England, would you still be my friend if my name was Little Lord Fuckleroy?
Yes.
Thank you.
No hesitation. I got that vaccine today. So I think we're breaking new ground. I'm sure there hasn't been at least 200 other podcasts where someone has gotten the vaccine and then recorded a podcast episode same day.
Huh.
But I'm sure we're the first.
Did you plan that?
Yeah, that was my whole intention, was a quirk of recording on a Sunday afternoon was for me to get vaccinated unexpectedly and then record a podcast later. So I've only had those little microchips floating around my veins for 4 hours, and I feel a little tired, but I feel fine otherwise. I got the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine. Maybe you've heard of it.
You got the biotech.
Yeah, biotech. I did.
You're a transformer now.
Yes, I'm a biotech transformer, nice. Which means I can go to any medical conference at a hotel and become a super.
Oh, good.
Like Biogen in Boston.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good stuff. I'm excited about it. And I was very unexpectedly. I've been trying to get that vaccine and not really having any pathway to get it. And then I received, through a quirk of my job, I was able to receive the vaccine, I think because my company overordered the amount of vaccines. Or I don't know if they overordered or, like, honestly, it's such a fucking mess. They probably just, you know, for healthcare.
Oh, and, so you ended up getting it through your work?
Yeah. So, like, for healthcare and healthcare-related organizations, I suspect they just gave them, depending on headcount, X number of thousand shots. And then it's just like, yeah, well, we vaccinated everyone who's eligible, and now we have X number more, you know what I mean? So I got an email on Friday morning that was like, do you want a vaccine this weekend? And I was like, yes, I do.
Are you able to see the TriCast chat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Yeah. I am a celebrity jumping the line. And listen, if you don't think that podcasters are essential personnel or essential workers, then I say, God damn you to hell. I provide a service to this world as a healthcare professional, LOL, and a podcaster, where I'm uplifting spirits. Without rounding down, do you know how many more? There's been about 500,000 deaths in America. Without rounding down, Cy, how many deaths would there have been?
I can't talk about how many deaths.
Half a million plus 150 or so, I'm going to guess.
I'm not at liberty to comment about deaths.
Every one of our weekly listeners would be dead.
Yeah. Chid, if you and I were in a relationship... Our guest could not wait to get out.
Yeah, we got to get him out here. If we were in a relationship, what? To ask me,
would
me the
I be the would I be the podcaster or the e-girlfriend? E-girl girlfriend.
You'd be the podcaster and I'd be the e-girl, because I think I keep you loose. You know what I mean? Like, you're
But then if you were an e-girl, wouldn't that mean you were horny online? Wouldn't we have to do it the other way?
No. I mean, if I were an e-girl, my horniness online would, if I were a different person, sure, I'd be horny online.
Actually, we got to get our guest out. He's chomping at the bit.
He's really chomping and he's bitten. Today, our guest is coming out to talk about Ghostbusters Answer the Call, the Ghostbuster Girl Ghostbusters, as it was derisively called, and also living in Boston. He's a writer for the Onion and Rick and Morty comics, and he's a little fuckboy. It's Alex Ferrer.
Hi, guys! I'm a little fuckboy!
Welcome to the pod, bud.
Hey! Damn great! I watched half of 2016's Ghostbusters Answer the Call, and I'm here! 1 year ago, you're like, hey, Alex, what's an indefensible movie you want to defend? And I'm like, yeah, Ghostbusters. I watch it now after a year of sitting alone with my thoughts? That's fine! We'll get into it.
Yeah, Alex.
Let me tell you a little something about watching movies.
Yeah.
My wife came home yesterday, and I was watching A League of Their Own, which is a favorite movie of mine.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks, Gina Davis.
I'm a Lori Petty guy. I'm a big Lori Petty crush guy.
Really? Because you got Gina Davis eyes, in my opinion.
Thank you. You got Betty Davis eyes. So I confessed to my wife that I had been watching television all day while she was gone, and this was the second time that I was watching A League of Their Own.
In the same day?
Yes.
You watched it twice in a row?
I mean, I was half watching.
And I'm the one with the yeasty dick infection here? You're watching A League of Their Own twice and jacking it to Lori Petty?
Jacking it?
I didn't. Wow. You see your boob in Point Break, but I didn't cut that
scene from Point Break into League of Their Own.
Did you cut that in?
Makes me a little sick. Yeah, it's a little
just
sick.
Just admit you like them in their baseball dresses.
Yes. How am I going to slide in that? That's what they said.
I don't even know. Now I know what you're saying, but it took me a second to catch up to what you were referring to with the how am I going to slide in that. I'm deeply disturbed, Cy. But
it's a
anyway,
line from the movie, you dick.
Is this a sports ball movie?
Yeah. Ooh,
is this a freaking like sports ball movie?
Oh, he doesn't like sports.
All of a sudden, this podcast has turned into the last podcast on the left, where there's a bunch of people just competing to make sound.
I gotta make a joke. Oh, fuck.
I'm joking right now.
Gotta get that joker. I'm so silly.
If you don't get it off, you gotta get it off. It's like Sai trying to bust a nut watching A League of Their Own for the fourth time in a row.
I've told you several times, Chid, I owned two VHS movies when I was a child. I owned The Mighty Ducks 2 and A League of Their Own, and I watched them both over and over again.
What a young Kenan Thompson! Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kenan Thompson. SNL's best cast member ever?
Knuckle.
Really?
I don't know.
he does a good David Ortiz, speaking of Boston.
He's maybe the best on it now.
Well, listen, Alex, based on how much coverage SNL gets on Twitter, I'm going to just go out on a limb and say that this is the golden age of that show, because I don't think it's ever been talked about as much as it is
now. This is the golden age of like 45-year-old guys going, I don't know why this show's not for me. This has been a big theme with me this weekend, some tweet everyone yelled at me for. It's just, some things are just aimed at 15-year-olds, and that's fine. Go read a good book. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, that's true. And speaking of which, that's probably a quick segue into this week's movie. But before we get into that, I want to just say, so obviously, like, I saw this movie in theaters when it came out because I believe women, of course. And I also,
about ghosts?
I'm not... Yeah, I believe women when they say they've been haunted by ghosts, okay? Yeah. That's a thing that I take seriously, and not all men do. So, and also, hashtag not all men is what Sai was saying at the time when this movie came out. But not me. I was saying all men should go see Ghostbusters, and unfortunately all men did not, because it did
hashtag
not do quite well.
Hashtag cheetahs over party.
Yeah.
Can you just stop getting me canceled every week? Jesus.
Listen, Sai. So, Alex, you said you watched this movie around 2016.
I saw it in theaters. I liked it so much in theaters. Yeah. Culture has changed. I don't know. There was such a culture war around this movie, and I think the side I was on lost pretty bad.
Yes. I think you're correct. Sai, so, of course, you've seen this movie as someone who does the research for the show.
Yeah, I saw that. I watched the 1984 version of Ghostbusters.
Wait a second!
This is why. Because Sai is on the winning side of this culture war. He refuses to watch a movie that stars women.
Sai voted for Trump.
Sai voted for Trump three times. He voted for Trump in 2012 also.
I wrote him in.
He wrote him in because he was like, goddamn right, Obama's got to cave to that demand to see his birth certificate. All right, that was me. All right, we're back in. So, this movie, Sai, of course, was a big hater of. And
Jesus Christ.
All he wants is for the new Channing Tatum Ghostbusters movie to come out.
Is that him? I thought it was Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I haven't seen.
I thought Paul Rudd was just Ant-Man.
I've seen more hair of the new Ghostbusters.
Well, here's the thing. There are no jokes in it. There are no jokes. It's not a funny movie by design. It's a very serious thing in the Ghostbusters.
I ain't afraid of no jokes.
Well, hey, if you're not afraid of jokes, then if you're not afraid of jokes, then I know quite the movie for you. It's Ghostbusters Answer the Call. Because here's the thing about this movie is, Alex, you wanted to talk about this movie. I saw it in theaters. And again, because I'm a good feminist, I believe women. I can't be canceled. I've never been horny online, etc. But I saw this movie with my wife. We were very excited to see it. I thought it would be good. I thought, like, hey, it's got Melissa McCarthy. She's good and stuff. And it's got, what's her name? And Kate McKinnon. And
Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones.
Kristen Wiig, yeah, she's good. Leslie Jones is good. Like, Zach Woods is funny. I like the people in it. I was
One very big one is UCB legend Neil Casey as the villain in, like, the only good role he's ever had. That really sucks, because, you know, everyone from that movie is eventually going to bounce back on their feet. That movie kind of stalled the careers of its four, like, near-perfect stars, but Neil Casey wasn't a star before this. He just has to keep grinding. It sucks. Sorry.
Yeah.
We're in the tangent.
No, but that's a good point.
Yeah.
Good point. But yeah, so this movie came out, and I remember before it was released, there was a lot of talk about how it was rushed, and like the script wasn't completely done when they began filming, which is always a good sign. That's always what you want when a film begins filming. I don't know. It when I saw it, my instant reaction upon leaving was like, oh man, there are like three funny things in that movie. maybe two. It's not really a good comedy, and it's also not really a good action movie. And I'm a little bit disappointed that this is going to be like. Basically, my disappointment was, I was like, just for the sake of the culture war not being completely lost, I wish it was a 40% better movie.
Well, it's, I don't know. Did you see I saw Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar, and it kind of set this whole era of comedy into a hideous light. Did you see that film? Because that movie was perfect.
I've seen the preview for it several times.
I don't even know anything about that movie. Just for context, my wife was pregnant when we saw this movie, and then she had we had our son like 5 months later, and I've seen like two movies since he's been born. So
did you stay awake for this one, Chid?
I did stay awake for this, because this is before I had a kid. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what movie did I fall asleep during?
Dunkirk,
that's right. Dunkirk. Yeah,
that's wow. They all risked their lives during that fight. Yep. And you couldn't even fucking stay awake. Okay, Sai, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, Sai, that was cool. Good job. Yes, yeah,
Sai. I don't know. I'm just looking at whose little circle. We're on TriCast. Looking at whose little circle auto-populates when they talk. It's fine.
You gotta put your hand to raise your hand.
Sai has raised their hand. Great, good. Because again, it's a great movie, and it's like an interesting movie because it's Kristen Wiig with Annie. I want to say Mumolo is her name. They wrote Bridesmaids, and this is their first movie. This is like Kristen Wiig's biggest movie without the Judd Apatow influence. And I think Judd Apatow was amazing 15 years ago, but watching this, I'm like, oh, this guy might have like ruined comedy. Because it's like this big audience tested thing where the jokes have to come from the personalities, but they don't really. It's like a warmed over Albert Brooks movie. And that's honestly, as much as I like Bridesmaids, the worst parts of it felt like that. And the worst parts of this, and like so much of this movie kind of felt like that. These tested weird jokes, people trying to be clever with each other when I just want to see some ghost hijinks.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that it's a weird, here's what I'll say is, like, I think that, like, leaving the movie, I was, like, I remember people being like, oh, Kate McKinnon is a star in this. And what I wanted to say to them, but I didn't have the balls to say online, was just because someone makes you horny does not mean that they're a star.
Hey.
It's true.
That's all that movie stardom is. I don't know if I agree. What's that? That's all movie. Well, fucking Gary Cooper, who's a Cary Grant.
The strong style type?
Yeah, the strong. Oh, hey, what happened to the strong style type?
What happened to the strong silent type?
Well, no, that is like the biggest difference between like a movie star and a character actor. It's like, that's why Gandolfini was never a movie star. He didn't make it sufficiently horny. And, like, I only want to choose guys, so I don't want to showcase my horniness. But I feel like something like Chris Hemsworth, like, yeah, he makes it horny. Wait, Chris Hemsworth's a movie star. Paul Bettany isn't. It's like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. So, like, Kyle Chandler, coach from Friday Night Lights, great on TV, but not a movie star because he doesn't make anyone horny. Same thing for Bryan Cranston, honestly. Yeah. Like, good on the small screen, doesn't make anybody horny. Like, where he's been the lead, it's been very bad.
Chid, do you think that this podcast makes anybody horny?
Ooh, I hope so. I hope people like scorching hot takes like this. This is a great... Alex, I've never thought of it this way, but I think you've really hit on something that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's what I think. And a comedy star is a little different because I think it shows the kind of person you would want to be. So it's why Zach Galifianakis is like a comedy star and like Neil Casey isn't, because all these like people saw him in The Hangover and like, yeah, I'm fat and have a beer.
Alex, I have two questions for
the
you.
The Jack Black effect, a decade
ago. Yeah. What's your question?
Alex, have you listened to this podcast before?
No. Okay. I don't listen to shit. What do you got?
It canceled my second question.
What's your second question?
I was going to ask if it made you horny.
The logo made me... It's like just watching a porno. Fucking jack off. Jack off in the first 2 seconds. I saw Rounding Down with Cheed and Psy. I didn't need to see it.
I like that you pronounce my name Cheed. I like that. It's
I'm
good.
Russian, baby.
To take a different angle on that. I like it. I'm going to start calling you...
What is it?
So, listen, Alex. As we are in our month of Alex's, the April of Alex's, I'm very happy to have you here. You've been kind of one of our great white whales because we've been trying to book you for nay on 2 years now, I feel like. True or false?
True. That's also why I'm talking about a movie I don't like that much anymore. Because I liked it when you booked me. This has been a rough year.
That's a classic side effect of this show. One time someone told us they wanted to talk about Supernatural, and they meant like ghosts and spirits, but I took it to mean they wanted to talk about the Carlos Santana record, Supernatural. So we spent an hour discussing that record before he revealed that that's not what he wanted to talk about.
That's fine. I love talking about this movie because I think it's... God. Because I was watching it, and this week there's a lot of... In the Marvel thing, there's been a lot of Marvel discussion. A tweet of mine went viral where, like, weirdos yelled at me, where I stated the opinion that it's weird that adults keep talking about this. And then I watched this movie, and I'm like, this is kind of the same thing. We saw the Trump-Hillary debacle kind of unwind itself over this weird movie, where we had an okay thing that meant a very important thing politically, and Nazis just fucking shouted it down. And then we had Hillary, like, lose to Trump. But it is also just, like, it's reboot culture is a part of it. This was one of the earliest examples of, like, reboot culture. But it is also just, like, we're politicizing, like, movies aimed at 13-year-olds. I don't know. That's my thought about this movie. That's the only thing I want to discuss.
I hear you on that. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that there's a lot of things that are discussed relentlessly, I'll just say, on the internet.
Yeah.
They aren't really worthy of that kind of discussion. And also the way that people talk about things is stupid. I think our discourse is like, sometimes people are like the discourse. Ugh. I just think that people are talk about things in stupider ways than ever before, because I don't know if that's because like Twitter connects like 15-year-olds to grownups. And so grownups act like they're 15 again. I think there's some like brainworm thing that's happening.
I think that's Annie's theory. My girlfriend, she says like, basically like, adults should not be in contact with like the 15-year-olds who think the MCU is the new Bible. Like, these two groups should just not have this much contact with each other.
Yeah, it also like polarizes people so that like, because you see a lot of like, oh, Marvel movies are all pieces of shit. Everything about them sucks. Everything Marvel's ever produced is terrible. It's like, all right, well, I don't give a shit about Marvel movies, but like, I'm sure they're
the right
opinion. I'm not going to shit on them or like dunk on them all day. Like,
yeah.
It's also like, that's a thing that's, as like a near 40-year-old man, that's a very easy thing for me to do, to just like be like, oh, look at Vision. Oh, he's a robot. Oh. Like, I could do that all day. And, but why bother? I just don't understand what the, like, I don't get why people take so much pleasure in tearing down like very popular things that other people enjoy.
You don't understand that?
Well, as to Alex's point, who are you actually fighting with when you do that? Because no adult who's like 40 is like important movies of all time. No one would argue that.
You're
it's
not
ridiculous.
Fighting with anyone. You're saying it to get a rise out of people.
That's actually true. You're fighting with the concept of everyone. In your mind, you're this lone little guy again. First of all, no one should have an audience of like thousands of or hundreds of people for like their every single thought.
Yeah.
It's unnatural. But I think it is. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm finally going to hand it to culture. This culture that either like hates comic book movies or hates or thinks they're good. It's lone little guy against Godzilla, which is good culture.
Well, the comic book movies thing is funny because I think that it's not a new or refreshing thought. Like we had a person on the show over a year ago who was like, I'm sick of every movie being a comic book movie, which I can understand that point of view.
Yeah.
But comic book movies are the same as Western movies. Like it's going to, you know, it will wax and wane. I'm sure that we'll have it'll recede a little bit in the next decade. I'm positive. And then it'll be, you know, but they're just big budget movies that are based on existing IP. Yeah. And there's a low, like it's low risk and, you know, it's all green screen bullshit anyway. Yeah, so I don't know how expensive they are even to make. Like it's, I get it. I get why they exist and why they're going to keep churning them out because they keep making money. It seems weird to take umbrage with that so specifically when I feel like there's also never been more delivery vehicles for lower budget and more risk taking things than there are now, if that makes sense.
Well, here's the thing. It's when you look at like movie culture, what was happening with Marvel did not start with Iron Man. It started in 1975 with Jaws. That was the movie that made people go, we can make billions of dollars if we market to teens with a big monster that adults can see as well. And if we're being real, like Star Wars, which people our age love, because I was around when we were kids, is honestly the first big thing to franchise this shit. But if you really hate comic book movies, and I'm, you know, I don't care, but I do think art house movies are more important, please talk about them more. Nomadland broke my little fat baby heart. Shitting in a little bucket. Like it, Amazon. Yeah, I don't know. That's my thought. But it is like the Ghostbusters thing is the same thing. Because I was, 2016? How old was I? I want to say 27. I was 27 when like that film came out. All of my friends were like people in the comedy scene trying to discuss whether or not it was good or bad. And in the end, I don't know. There was actually really a lot like riding on this film for women in comedy too. And I think, you know, I'm not a woman in comedy. I don't know if it succeeded or didn't. I think vehicles like Broad City or Girls kind of paved the way that this movie maybe could not. But yeah, there was a lot of
Bride itself too. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, very, so you already mentioned it, but it's a direct line between Bridesmaids and this, obviously. Like, that, you know, that was like where I think studios had the buy in, like, oh, a female, like, centric cast and film that's a comedy can make a shitload of money.
Oh, yeah. Also, I think, like, white dudes are jaded in general with, like, all the entertainment they have. So when you release a movie that, like, has a, like, cast not made up of white people, non-white people will go see it. And it will, like, suddenly make, like, a ton of money, and studios will go, like, how'd this happen? Every time. A little bit of surprise. Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing, I guess, like, the interesting thing about the culture war that this brought on, I don't know if it's obviously some of it was the zeitgeist of 2016 and it being the election year and all the crypto fascism and all that. But the other part of it is that, like, I guess to counter that, right? Like when Crazy Rich Asians came out, that movie made a very high amount of money for how little it costs to make.
Yeah.
And that was not a movie that was like a big culture war movie the same way. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Like, there've been a lot of things that have happened since then that, you know, like even like to name a Marvel movie, Black Panther obviously came out after this and made a fuck ton of money. And by all metrics was a very good movie. And like, you know, not a huge culture war moment unless you're really paying close attention to like Fox News. And
unless
News
you're Ben
Max
Shapiro,
right. Yeah. But I think that I guess to kind of go back to that, it is the thing that is disappointing about this movie is it just feels like it could have been better. I guess like that was my reaction upon leaving the movie theaters. I was like, there's a few enjoyable things in it and there are a few funny things. There's like three, I remember like three laughs in the movie. And And that's rough for a comedy movie to have three. Because I remember seeing Bridesmaids and like laughing my ass off. There's a lot of really funny stuff in that movie, as I recall. I haven't seen it since it was in theaters, but yeah, I don't know. It was a bit disappointing in that regard, because I was really like, oh, it's got a good cast. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a good summer movie. And then it kind of just didn't deliver on anything. It didn't deliver the action from an action movie. It didn't deliver the comedy from a comedy. It feels like rewatching it. If you, I'm sure you maybe felt this when you watch it, but as someone who writes stuff, it just seems like it's a movie that's very actively trying to sell you story beats the whole time. If that makes sense, yeah. Like it's so focused on the plot compared to comedy or action. Like it just so much of it is like plot.
I will admit, I saw the movie like twice before this. Both times I had like the fucking time of my life. Like I did love it in theaters. When I saw Girl Slayer, I lost my little mind. Yeah. I liked that a lot. I think what kind of happened with me is just like too many weird things happened to me surrounding this movie. Like concerning the content of the film, I liked it fine. I thought it was about as good as any comedy that I could see in theaters with stars that I liked a lot. I got a Funko of like Kate McKinnon as Holtzman, which I know will get me roasted on freaking Twitter. But I did enjoy it a lot. I felt like there was like a little Grant Morrison effect, like a little metatextual effect when the villain turned out to be like the mascot from the logo. I enjoyed it immensely. I don't want to downplay how much I liked it. For me, what kind of happened was that just, first of all, I expect more now out of, like, these comedy films. You know? I was, like, so happy to be a soldier in a culture war. And that's true in general. I expect, like, more out of, like, everything, because I feel like Trump burnt everyone down so much. I think that's why you see also Twitter as a battlefield, as people aren't willing to let, like, okay things slide by anymore. Yeah, it's not that funny, but that's true for most films. Yeah,
you're right. I mean, I know Harris Whittles would say that there's only been like five funny comedy movies of all time.
He also said Dr. Strange Love sucks, and I cannot abide by.
Well, listen, I mean, yeah. He made a lot of good and a lot of terrible points, and that was his genius. But yeah. But what I will say is that this, to your point, people won't let like kind of average things slide, and I think that that's true. But I think that also is the. That's the polarity of like 15-year-olds driving the discourse, where everything has to be the greatest thing ever or the worst thing. Because that's the society we've built at this point, and that's how online discourse exists. Yeah. Where when you let like preteens and young teens drive the discourse, then like I remember being 15 and thinking that every new record that I listened to is the greatest record ever.
Oh yeah.
If I go back to those records, do I still feel that way?
What about records most came out when you were 15? Let's talk about this. Let's explore this a little bit.
The first Dashboard Confessional record came out, I think, when I was 15.
No, 15-year-old Rio was right.
Yeah, that record was great. Great record. Yeah, it was good. But also, like, I felt like, what else was I feel like was the greatest record of all time? That Newfound Glory record that was self-titled. That's not the greatest record of all time.
Did Bleed American come out when you were 15?
No, Bleed American came out when I was almost 17, I believe.
What year are you talking about?
2000?
2000?
Yeah, we're older than you, my man.
Yeah, but a little bit. Now we're both like fucking adults at this point.
Yeah, we're all adults in our 30s. But we're not the adult part.
Yeah, he's not a 30 yet, I don't think.
I am a 30. I'm 32.
Yeah,
Well, 30 is such a miserable age.
Alex, we don't ask people how old they are, and Cy, you just broke a fucking rule of rounding down. So I need you to take a 1 minute timeout.
Do I got to round down my age? 30.
Excuse me. Yeah. You asked him how old he was. Cy is taking a 1 minute timeout for that.
Cy muted himself.
Alex, the only thing we're going to do here is on this show, we never ask people how old they are. We do ask them, however, how old they were when 9/11.
I was an 8th. Oh, yeah, I was 12.
Perfect. Great.
Yeah, great.
There you go.
Fucking watching, great. Going like, oh, great. I can't wait for my bar mitzvah. Yeah.
Four years younger than me. Perfect. Yes. Did your bar mitzvah have a theme?
No. I was poor. I had a poor person bar mitzvah. It was just a very Orthodox synagogue. Are you Jewish?
No, but if I was, I would have also had a poor person bar mitzvah. Rest assured.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I wish I had any sort of religion. At the time, I had dropped out of CCD, being a not real Catholic. Without telling my parents, and then they didn't find out till I was like 17 and supposed to make my confession. Hadn't been going for the last 7 years.
That feels like an important part of being a Catholic is giving up Catholicism.
I gave it up when I was like 8 or 9, so I gave it up super early.
Fucking impressive.
Very young. Yeah. I listen, like that Aerosmith song, I had my mother's eyes, but I was yesterday's child to me.
Wow. That's fucking
yeah. It was deep. I guess that's the thing, is just to get back to this movie. Everything's either the best thing or the worst thing ever. This movie is very squarely like an average movie. I think that's the and in the culture war, something being average is a problem.
I guess it's kind of it. Yeah. Like it was about.
You can't rally behind it and be like, "This is amazing! It's the best movie! It's the best comedy of the year!" Because it's like I don't even know what other comedies came out this year in 2016. There's probably 2016? Like three other. What other like big comedies of 2016?
Can I make a prediction? I bet this was the best one.
Maybe it was.
Well, why is
only like there's only like five or six comedies a year. I feel like
they don't make big. Yeah, sorry, go on. They don't make any anymore because they're trying to sell them to like Asian markets. And comedy doesn't.
Oh, that movie Keanu came out. People seem to like that.
Neighbors 2 with Zac Efron.
So Keanu would beat this, obviously.
I think Keanu was maybe the best comedy of the year. Let's see what else. Why Him? The Bryan Cranston vehicle?
Sausage Dirty Party. Grandpa. Some people liked that.
Ooh, I did love Sausage Party. And I love Popstar.
It also,
what about Dirty Grandpa?
Oh, that's my number one. Did you guys see Dirty Grandpa?
No.
Incredibly bad movie. Just the worst film you've ever seen. In ways you don't expect. The movie ends with him getting Aubrey Plaza pregnant. And then he shows off his baby.
That sounds like a happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah. He shows the baby and he goes, "The baby got his dad's dick." And that's Zac Efron gets like fucked by a dog.
Wow.
De Niro uses the N-word. It's fucking insane. Here we go.
I haven't even seen most of these movies, but let me just name some movies that also came out in 2016 that are comedies. Yeah. Ready? And these are probably all movies that you would rank ahead of this.
I think so.
We got Hail Caesar, the Coen Brothers comedy movie.
Yes, of course. That's probably going to be number one.
Yeah. There you go. Then we got Zoolander 2. Didn't see it. We got Sausage Party. We got Deadpool. Not to my taste, but I'm sure that's
my number one, baby.
Deadpool was really good.
I love Deadpool.
We got Keanu. We got Central Intelligence. I'm sure some people like that. We got The Nice Guys, which
I gotta tell you, I'm on like page 12 of the list Dirty that Grandpa. Comes up on Google when you look for 2016 comedies.
It's Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. That's a good one if you like those dudes. So my point is like I would put it behind most of the movies I just named.
But I will say this:
missing the most important movie of 2016 that came out.
What? Which movie is that?
Ride Along 2 with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart.
Sure. Yep. You're right about that for sure.
It's a big year for Kevin Hart. He also did Central Intelligence.
He did
with The Rock.
With The Rock, a little guy next to a big guy. Yeah.
Also, Don't Think Twice came out in 2016.
What's that?
Chris Gethard, Mike Birbiglia, improv.
I'm putting movie. That last. I apologize to everyone involved.
I looked Rotten Tomatoes best reviewed comedies of 2016. Number one is Love and Friendship, which looks like a period piece. I'm sure that's hilarious. Number two is Hunt for the Wilder People. I don't know about that.
That is one of the best films I've ever seen. Ironically,
is it a comedy though?
Yeah, but it's a Taika Waititi movie. It's a good comedy. Yeah.
Okay.
Alex, is there a movie that you don't like though? Because I haven't heard you shit on any
of it. I think that's the thing of the culture wars is I like movies. I'm easy. I saw Tom and Jerry yesterday and I was like, that's a good time. I like that's movies.
That's good. That's good and refreshing. Because honestly, the people sometimes we talk ostensibly this is a music and comedy podcast, more music than comedy. But we talk about music a lot, and a lot of times we've had people recently be like, "You guys like everything. Like you're very positive about stuff."
Yeah.
And that's true. We like music. Like Cy and I both like music. That's the thing that's like innately true about both of us. Most of our conversations, aside from this podcast, in the years we've known each other, the decade we've known each other, are about music. We both enjoy music. We both enjoy liking music. We both want to find new things that we like. We don't like seek out things that we hate. You know what I mean? And I also
we try our best not to talk too much shit about the things that we aren't really into.
Like there's things that we're not into. I'm sure there's movies that you're not into also. Like you're more of a movie guy, I'm going to guess, than a music guy. But like when you're 15, again, going back to the culture wars, it's really fun when you're developing your own taste to be like, this sucks. It's the worst thing ever. Like that's fun when you're 15.
Yeah.
But when you're like nearing fucking middle age, it's not actually that fun or refreshing to be like, oh, I really hate this porridge radio band. Like, what the fuck? Who cares? Why? What does that benefit anyone for me to put that into the world? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit. There's a list I found of 16 comedies, and I'm really surprised that you haven't mentioned it yet because it's right in your wheelhouse.
Which one?
Finding Dory. Haven't you?
Oh,
yeah, I have seen that. Yeah, that's pretty good. Although I hate Ellen. Speaking of things I don't like, not for any like she just seems like a real piece of shit. But
well, that came out. Yeah,
is because you've seen all those kids movies. That
I have. Yeah, Finding Dory's good. It's a good movie. I mean, I think it's actually probably more funny and entertaining than Finding Nemo in some ways. Yeah, I don't know. More rewatchable.
By the way, I do want to point out that other than Finding Dory, none of these films do star women,
except for Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but it also, like, it kind of sucks that it was politicized that much, come to think of it. If it just came out, shitty little Ghostbusters reboot, everyone would be like, what an okay time at the theater. Let's all go home.
That's the thing. Like, you see The Boss with Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Bell?
I should. I haven't.
I didn't, no.
Yeah.
I haven't seen most of her movies, Melissa McCarthy, although I really loved her in Bridesmaids. But think I don't know, man. I would say that's the thing is the Ghostbusters stink is kind of what fucked this movie in some ways.
Yeah.
Because to be frank, like I never saw Zoolander. Did you see Zoolander 2, Alex?
Nope.
Did you see? I'm sure you saw Zoolander, the original.
Yeah, of course. That came out when I was 9/11 age.
Same. Yes. And that came out when we were all 9/11 age since it came out in 2001. Go figure.
Yeah.
One thing everyone can agree is that Zoolander, the original, came out when we were all 9/11 age.
Yeah.
And we all agree about that.
Can I tell you something? I was watching that scene where he does the thing with on the runwalk, and then I look out the window. First plane hit the towers.
Oh, really? Is that true?
No. I was on a camping trip. Everyone remembers there they were. I was on a class camping trip. I wasn't watching Zoolander as the first plane hit the towers.
You were camping in September?
I guess we were.
Fact check you. That
trying to
seems
fucking
weird,
poke
you know?
Holes in my story. No, because it was like a school.
Checking you on a Tuesday. It's in
a
September.
It's a school orientation thing. That's why it was like early September because we were all back in school.
I wouldn't know anything about that. My school, the only thing my school oriented me to was getting my ass kicked by dipshit.
Melissa McCarthy, she hasn't made a lot of bad movies, but the movie she did with Jason Bateman in 2013 was garbage.
Wait, which one's that?
Identity Thief?
Yeah. I didn't see that, but I remember
it was
that
really bad.
I'm going to go ahead and say I really like Spy.
Jason Bateman. Hey, speaking of people who don't make you horny, Jason Bateman, I feel like he doesn't make anyone horny. And that's why he is no longer a film star.
I'd fuck him.
You'd be surprised. I know people who are like, but he's not. I mean, he's not a movie star. He'll never be a movie star. He's a TV star because you can relate to him. He looks like your dad. He looks like you someday. Like that's in Arrested Development. That's why he was perfect as like the boring guy.
If I wanted to have missionary sex and go to bed by 8:30,
perfect
for that. Yeah, I said on Twitter the other day, someone was shit talking Boston and comparing it to segue into our next topic and comparing it to Chicago unfavorably. And I said that I think Boston is the best. Like Chicago is the best case scenario version of Boston. Like. If you were to compare the two cities, like Boston, you know, let's be honest, everything closes at like midnight. It's very not it's not really a big city the way that big cities are big cities, et cetera. And I think that Jason Bateman is like the best case scenario version of most middle-aged white guys, right? Like that's what I'm trying to say. Like we all wish we could look like Jason Bateman. Best case scenario is like I have a highly successful career. I look like him. I can wear suits that I can just buy off the rack.
Yeah.
Everything's great.
Speak for yourself. I do have a highly successful career and also look a lot like Gaten.
Yeah, definitely.
Wait, what's your career?
Podcaster.
Oh, yeah.
He's a piss taster.
The piss taster? At the doctor? Because you're at the doctor's office.
Put some respect on my name, Alex.
I know about this job.
Piss taster.
You're the piss taster. Because sometimes these guys taking their drug tests. They're like, I'm not going to put piss. I'm just going to put like lemonade in there. You're the guy who has to taste it.
That's me. He catches it.
He catches him.
Try and get away with lemonade. That's why being a piss tester isn't that bad.
It's very important.
I like lemonade.
lemonade, apple juice. You've seen it all. You saw someone try to use Irish black pudding as their piss.
You just don't want to go. You just don't want to go around the corner, Alex, because that's where fudge.
That's where fudge is, man.
Oh, you guys like fudge?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I like fudge.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not get a big fan. I just like it, you. Sometimes, like you go, Alex. You'll know this from being in the Boston area. But sometimes, like you'll go on like a, you'll go like to Cape Cod or whatever, and there'll be like places where they make like fudge shoppy and stuff. Yeah, fudge, ye old fudge shoppy. And you'll see them making it, and you'll be like, oh, that looks good. And like whenever I eat it, I'm just like, this is just like eating solid frosting. I'm just not. I'm like, there's one note to this. I want more notes.
It's a one time treat,
like a nice peanut butter and chocolate fudge.
That's not
one taste though. It's like there's no complexity of flavor. I want multiple. I want textures. I want flavors. I want my desserts to be like Vietnamese food. I want salty, sweet, umami, spicy, bitter. I want it all.
So you want like a cookie? You don't have to get fudge.
Yeah, that's just
get a cookie. Get a fudge cookie.
Fudge is the worst. Fudge is the worst dessert. Anyone who likes fudge is an idiot.
I'd be so happy if the culture wars became about fudge instead of like division or whatever. That would just make me laugh. If you're gonna argue in front of me all day on Twitter, just amuse me.
I like my favorite part of when culture wars happen about things is the second or third wave when people who are actually funny do ironic, stupid things with stuff. Like I've seen a lot of, but that's only funny for like, you have to catch it like the 4 hours when it's funny, because then that becomes not funny also. Yeah. But if you catch it at the right time, like there was some good, I didn't even see the last episode of WandaVision yet.
Yeah.
And so I still have to watch it. Haven't had a chance. But I've been too busy, you know, being an essential person and getting vaccinated for COVID, obviously. Yeah. Big shot over here.
Skipping the line.
Just cutting the line. Yep. Cutting the line. Getting a vaccine before my 60-year-old parents.
Wow. Because
that makes sense. You know.
What happened, Chip?
So.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Celebrity jumping the line.
That's not my fault. Let me say. Yeah, celebrities are jumping the line. Celebrities like me and The Rock. And listen. If my parents wanted to get the vaccine, they should learn how to use a fucking computer. Okay? No, I'm just kidding. But the reality is, like, I don't feel bad at all about getting a vaccine before my parents, and here's why. Everything's fucking stupid. The way we did this whole vaccine thing sucks shit and doesn't make any goddamn sense. Yeah. They're just fucking giving them out. If you can get it, get it. Everyone's going to get it in the next, like, 4 months anyway, especially with Jane. So, like, anyone, like, arguing, like, oh, you shouldn't be able to get it if you're over... Like, I saw an idiot on Twitter by the name of Clue Haywood, who's a real dipshit, who like is, you know, he's a Deadspin guy. Yeah, he's a friend. Okay. He's a dipshit.
Oh, he's a Deadspin. Go on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He made the point that like BMI is bad for calculating, you know, if you should get it or not. And I initially thought his point was like that BMI is a false indicator of obesity because
no, they made me get insurance for that when I bought my house, Chid.
Cool. Yep. You did need that BMI insurance.
Wow. Right.
But it all comes back to you, so don't worry about it. Anyway, but he wasn't even making that point. He was just like, well, if you're obese, you're taking a risk, so why should you?
Jesus! This isn't your friend. This guy sucks.
Yeah.
This guy really your friend?
He sucks. Dumb. Very stupid. So stupid ass point. And my point is, whoever the fuck can get vaccinated should just get it. Like, they're doing a terrible job rolling it out. Yeah. Just anyone who can get it, just fucking get it. My parents will get it in due time, as they should. Should they have gotten it before me? Yes. Yeah. But obviously, no one who's intelligent is running this. So, here we go. Just to come back to this point. Fudge is the worst thing ever. I hate fudge. And fuck fudge. And if you like fudge, I'm going to find you and I'm going to shit in your mouth. And that fudge.
Fudge, vaccines, WandaVision. Damn, Cheed's being edgy.
So, Alex, straight up.
Yeah?
What makes you too good to live in Boston anymore?
Yeah, what the fuck? What, you think you're better than Boston?
I am probably going to move back in the next 5 years. LA sucks ass. No, I wish I stayed there. I want to fucking Emerson. Fucking shithole college that prepares you for a career of getting people coffee. And everyone's like, oh, you gotta move to LA. And I was like, oh, I gotta move to LA. And for the past 10 years, I basically just wrote copy. And it sucked ass. I love Boston. I wish I still lived there.
Yeah, man. You could be working in like a biotech company.
Yeah,
or a fintech company.
I'm too fucking dumb.
You'd be working from home.
Yeah, you could be working from home in a biotech or fintech company.
I was teaching Hebrew school.
Those are the only two options in Boston, though.
I was teaching in a Hebrew school. That's what I was doing when I moved.
Oh, yeah. Or you could be a teacher. Those are literally the three career options. That's true.
Well, I'm a dumb person, as the fact that I am in comedy shows. And I think LA is great for guys like me. It's like, oh, can you write a joke about this brand? And I'm like, boy, can I. Boston's for smarties. Boston's for like lab technicians.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah. I think you're sorely mistaken on this, Alex. Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, if I were going to compare this to a meme, you're like at the first level take there, which is you're like, I'm stupid, therefore I can't have a real, like a corporate
job. The galaxy brain thing. Okay, yeah.
So the galaxy brain take is like, everyone who works corporate jobs is a fucking idiot. Believe me. Yeah. Someone who's worked a corporate job for nearly 15 years, everyone's a fucking moron. They all suck shit. Everyone's dumb as hell. And you deserve to be making as much money as you want to make.
It's true. Everyone does have their low qualities.
Yeah, like we're talking about
as someone who works a corporate job, and like, you know, I have my qualities that make me suck shit to work with. Like, there's an asshole in every industry.
Yeah, sorry, are you in Boston? Assholes though.
Yeah. So I work out of Boston, but I live in Maryland. I lived in Boston.
Oh, one of those guys.
I lived in Boston up until December, and I just bought a house.
Mazel. So it's like a COVID thing. Mazel tov.
Thank you.
Yeah,
rules. Yeah. Yeah.
I was
a Boston guy for a long time, and now, of course, I'm a Philly guy as the end of this podcast.
Oh, that's why I shouldn't say. My brother moved there from Boston. From New York.
Mm.
But yeah, that feels like Philly feels like an upgrade. It feels a little dirtier, a little crazier. I feel like
Philly
it's more
is an
fun.
Upgrade from Boston?
Oh, 100%. From what I love about Boston, which is like, you know, the smart people were great. It's probably why I read a billion books. But I was a stand-up there. I love dirty-ass Boston. I love shitty-ass fucking the intellectual at the bar who read an article and he'll tell all his friends about it. Kind of like
is
energy.
Wearing a scarf.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 I love that shit. Yeah.
Did you do the Hong Kong? Were you a Hong Kong guy?
Oh, shit. Were you guys stand-ups in Boston? Yeah, with Rick Jenkins at the Comedy Studio. Absolutely.
Oh, nice. No, I wasn't a stand-up in Boston. Oh, okay. I certainly was a stand-up liker. But, yeah, I lived down the street from the...
Stand-up liker.
I lived on the street from the Ding Ho, which was no longer the Ding Ho, in Somerville, in Inman Square, yeah. When I was, like, 25 to... Or 24 to 26? I don't even know.
Shit, remember when we tried to do a fantasy draft at the Thirsty Scholar?
Yes. Yeah, we did. We did fantasy football drafts there many times, like three or four times. Yeah.
Making me miss Boston. You know, go on.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Listen, like the only things that will make you miss Boston are this podcast. And if you listen to that second record by Titus Andronicus, where he mentions Somerville a few times in the Fungwa bus and 02143. But yeah, it's a weird place. It's an interesting city. And speaking of Philly, and what I would say is if Chicago is like the best case scenario Boston, then I think that like Philly is the best case scenario Baltimore. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's the best a dirty city can be is what you're basically saying.
Is Baltimore a C-tier city?
We'd have to ask Sammy Edo that. And I know you don't want to ask him anything, Si. So,
well, you know, I think we should have him back on. It's time for me.
I'd love to have him back on. I'd love to have him read a poem about little girls being evil once more.
God. That wasn't
it's
this? Creepy.
It's one of my Deadspin friends. He's cool.
Are these people really your friends?
Yeah, sorry. They're my friends from Deadspin. From Deadspin.com. Before
they're his friends from the internet.
Before everyone quit. Yeah. Listen, Alex, I don't know if you know this, but there's Deadspin people in the Bug Cult and Slurp fam now that are like that are connected, and that's because of me. They all flow from me. I've connected these groups of idiots.
You're making this shit legitimate.
He's made people who like sports have to watch the sleeves tweet.
Yeah, like I made sports fans sleeves fans and connected some sports people to Bug Cult people and Slurp fan people, and I'm just trying to bridge that gap and just make everyone miserable. It's good.
Right, everyone. Yeah. No one deserves
certainly
to be happy.
Make everyone miserable. That's true, Chid.
Yeah, I don't want to make anyone happy. What's the thing you miss most about Boston, Alex?
I mean, other than my parents, probably the comedy scene. Honestly, I almost stayed just to be in the stand-up scene. I only can compare this to L.A., but it was like that weird veneer of Boston intellectualism that goes through. Like, it actually kind of bugs me when people like try to associate like not reading books with being poor, like in a way that's like almost defensive. You know, it's dumb because, you know, like I was kind of poor. I was poor in Boston. And, you know, it's the thing is Boston had such a good library culture, had such a good, at least this is from my point of view. I'm an immigrant. So I might have been in like a different community than others, but there was like such a big like library culture, thinky culture. And when you go into stand up, you have these people crafting their jokes as if they're the greatest, not the greatest poets, but as if they're like these poets in like the age of Thoreau trying to like make this word into this word, make this like beautiful, perfect piece. You know, these comedians spend like years working on their sets, and it's not that they're repeating the jokes that work, it's that they really just like keep rewriting this shit, which is a little obsessive, but it is kind of like the guy who's like working on his novel for like 9 years. And
yeah.
I'm not going to say the stand-up was always like great, but it was always really, really good because they worked so hard to make it like really, really good. And LA has better like off-the-cuff shit because people don't do that. But it also has so many people who just kind of like are kind to each other, which is like obvious. That's just LA culture in general, but also just like you have the culture in general in LA for entertainment is the person who is furious he did not break in yet and who is angry at the concept of comedy, which you see on Twitter like all the fucking time. Yeah. So that's the thing I miss. Like Josh Gondelman, is from Boston. He, I don't know if mentor is the right word. I don't know if that's the word he used, but he like helped me a lot, like figure things out as that kind of like patient hand from like a smart mind that you don't see in LA. So I guess I'm saying stand-up is like a weird art form over there in a way that it here it's like a careerist thing.
I wonder if that makes sense. I mean, I wonder if some of that is like there's more of a like cult of personality sort of thing as opposed to the like Boston's a place that really puts a lot of emphasis on writing in general. Yeah. And I don't know if that's because of the like intellectualism of the universities or what the fuck it is, but you know, I mean, I as a fiction writer, I wrote and would do classes at Grub Street, which is a Boston thing. And I have very mixed feelings about that in general. But what I will say is that I've met plenty of great writers there. Like I met a lot of writers when I was young. Like I started taking classes there when I was 19 or something. Exactly. And I met like lots of older writers who were like, you know, anywhere from in their 30s to 60s who would be like, let me teach you how to do this better. Here's the thing you should learn how to do. This is the thing you should think about. This is the thing you should consider. And like, that's a thing that I don't think exists in a lot of communities in general. And it's, you know, if you're receptive to that, that's great. Some people are very unreceptive to that. But I do think that it's a place where you can find people in whatever medium you're working in who are like willing to lend a hand or like who are like, yeah, I'll give you a little of my time because, you know, like we're doing this for not like you're doing it for fun, but almost like in Boston's not a place that I guess I don't know how to put this exactly, but I feel like people don't have the pretension of expecting that they can actually make a career of anything in Boston. If that makes sense.
True, yeah.
So it's like if your expectation is not that like you're going to make a career out of anything, then there's just less pressure. It's like you can be more refined and figure out what you're doing, and you're more open to kind of helping people, and you don't see everything as like a waste of your, you're not like, oh, I helped that young writer, but what's that going to get me? Like, it's not that kind of bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. 10,000. No, you are 100%. You are 100% on the money. That's like, that's across the board. You just feel more comfortable being yourself. There's this weird energy in LA that I hate. It's like, oh, you better not be mean to this guy. Someday he might like make your career. And I think that it's funny because you get the other side of that where people in LA rebel by like being very harsh to like everyone. You know what I mean? There's this like weird energy in Boston. You know, you don't give a shit. I felt like a rock star doing comedy in Boston because you don't have to think beyond the show you're doing now. I guess maybe that's it. It's just so much easier to live in the moment and be a good person in the moment. And in LA, you're not living in the moment. Even when you get like a career stuff, you're like, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
LA sucks.
Are you saying that there are no good people in LA? That's your take?
There are what?
There are no good people in LA. There's not any good
people. There's great people in LA. There's amazing people in LA. But the thing
is, you heard it here first. Alex has said that there are no great people.
Wow, that's not what he said, actually.
Weird.
We don't do gotcha journalism here, Sai.
I'm not allowed to misconstrue things people say.
I've never misconstrued anything, ever. Never once on this show have I misconstrued anything anyone said.
Except me. LA rules. I love LA. You become the bad person in LA. Usually, because I should not be thinking about my career this much. I should be thinking about being happy. Boston rules.
But also, how much of that is because there are opportunities there? Like, I guess that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're looking at any career where there's especially heavy gatekeeping and like there's very coveted spots that are open to select few.
Yeah.
You end up with like abuses of power and people who are creepy and all like,
yeah,
all of that shit breeds awful shit. And that's true in any industry or in any world. Yeah. Like, and there's little micro versions of that in the literary world. There always have been. I don't know. Like, I just think that that's kind of the way it goes, right? Like, if you're trying to break through in a place where not that many people break through, there's going to be lots of weird, like bitterness and people who are resentful. And I don't know. I guess that's the thing. Like, I've been ostensibly a fiction writer for 13 years, 12 years. I've published a bunch of stuff. I haven't had a book published yet. And I, you know, whatever. Like, I feel like that's not my career, I guess. Like, I do it because I love it. And I don't have this presumption that I'm ever going to be able to do that as a full-time career. And that's fine. Like, I guess that's also like, I've made my peace with that, where I do it because I like to do it. And that's as good a reason to do anything as anything else, if that makes sense.
I mean, you have the correct philosophy. Here's my Ellie brain take. You could get published at any old age. You have a healthier attitude than I do. Absolutely. Because when you started talking, I'm like, nah, shit, there's this place you can submit to, this place you can submit to.
Yeah, yeah. I'm submit to tons of places, but that's the thing. Like, it's you do and don't, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think that's just the way it goes, is you know what, there's tons of places where I could have a, like, yes, I'm sure there are indie places. I have a book that's done, and I'm sure I could send it to certain indie places and it could be published, but I'm kind of like, yeah, if you want to, I mean. Well, but yeah, it's one of those things where I kind of am like, well, I want to do this the quote right way or whatever. Like, I'd like to kind of go through the means and find someone who really likes it. And I don't want to kind of, I don't want to, I've had people be like, why don't you self-publish? I'm like, because I don't really have any interest in doing that necessarily. Not to knock self-publishing, but I'm not going to find an audience self-publishing, or, you know what I mean? Like, there's certain things where...
Sorry.
I don't know.
I don't want to interject. If you found an audience for your podcasting, which you did, you can definitely find... It's not going to be... Here's the thing. It's not going to be a huge audience, but, like, if you put out, like, a Substack, do a chapter a week, I don't know. I'll tell you honestly, these are all thoughts I'm thinking now, because even though I have some credits, it is, like, always, like, a new fight to get, like, a new gig. You know, it's a little easier, but it's still, like, a fight, and I'm always thinking kind of, because I'm looking at all the Buzzcast podcasts, and I'm always going, like, the best thing you can do is self-release, and you have, for my food dude shit, maybe I didn't get as big enough a response as I wanted for those, but it is, like, very nice when people are like, the food dude, and I'm like, yeah, someone liked it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think that's the difference between, for me, though, I don't know how to put this, but I would say that I completely agree. I mean, I think with comedy stuff and everything, like, it's a thing that's digestible and a thing that is where your target audience is anyone who will pay attention to it. I think that it's a little different in, like, literary fiction, where you're kind of you're trying to reach X reader who is maybe not in the demographic who's going to read whatever bullshit you throw on the internet, or you self-publish and try to sell out of your trunk or whatever. I think it's a little different field. Especially because, like, the primary readers of literary fiction are, like, middle-aged women. Like, that's the reality, like, middle-aged women in America. And they're not going to, you know, find my blog or find my podcast or find my
find we talking my website. Like 50 Shades of Chin here?
Yeah, definitely. That's what we're talking.
You should do a Patreon where you every level you get another chapter of your...
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
So you have to pay, like, $600 to read the whole book? Sorry, interrupted. Go on.
Definitely. Yeah. I want people to pay $800 for the book. That's the thing that everyone wants smart. To do.
Yeah. You're right. Rocco only made $600 off his book.
You know what? Actually, you know what, Cy? You're right. I'm going to say this right here, right now. I'm going to self-publish my book. It costs $10 million. There's only going to be one copy of it. It's $10 million. It's going to be leather-bound. You can buy it. It costs $10 million.
This is like the Wu-Tang album.
You can do with it whatever you want.
I don't want you to get $10 million.
No, you do.
No, I don't.
Alex, just for context, if we make $5 million from this podcast, then Cy has to get two sandwiches tattooed. That's the
deal. Whoa. Does he get to choose the sandwiches?
Yes, they have to be sub sandwiches to replicate the specific size. What we call a sandwich cuck, because one time we were in a deli together in the city of Boston.
Which deli?
And Cy ordered, which is a funny word in Boston. There's not really delis there, but he ordered, there's like three.
Is this Brookline? Sorry, oh my God.
Exactly. There's Zaftig's, there's Michael's, there's like three.
That's the two Jewish blocks. That's the Jewish neighborhood, is those
there
two
we go.
Blocks. Yeah, okay, sorry, go
You
on.
Got it. So, but we were in a non Jew. We were in an Italian deli over by like.
It's been a good recording, guys. We'll see you later.
Yeah. And Cy ordered a sandwich. He ordered a steak and cheese sub, and the guy gave him two steak and cheese subs. And what did Cy do? He just paid for and ate both of them. So I called him a sandwich cuck because he didn't return one of the sandwiches.
Is that the opposite of a sandwich cuck? That's a sandwich threesome.
I think it's a sandwich. The man kind of cucked him because I he was a surly man, and Cy didn't want to tell him like, no, I only ordered one sandwich. He just took it.
Here's what if we're doing a sex metaphor for this. Mm-hmm. So I thought he was going to eat one sandwich, but that sandwich brought along its sexy friend.
Well, yeah. That's true. If he paid for one and he received two, I would agree.
No, I paid for both sexy friends because I'm a gentleman.
Sounds like Cy is a gentleman. He is a good, he's the guy who pays for porn. He's a good.
It's called chivalry.
Cy's mm-hmm. a sandwich gentleman.
Cy, are you the guy who pays for porn? Because there's only, as far as I can tell, in that economic business, there's only like one in the whole world.
Yeah, I go to porn.com and I have a subscription.
One booty, please.
And it costs $10,000 a month.
I'm like, one porn, please.
And you're keeping the whole internet afloat. It's nice of you to do that.
Is this the Ghostbusters episode? Are you guys still going to title this Ghostbusters?
Yeah.
We talked about it for 20 minutes.
I know you've never listened to it before, but this is
the show. I don't listen to shit, but yeah.
We never talk about the actual topic.
Wait, that's not true. We talk about the topic extensively. And let me just say, Zach Woods, criminally underutilized in Ghostbusters Answer the Call, in my opinion.
It's kind of done.
Yeah.
As a star. They all are. That's like, sorry, I interrupted. Yeah, go on.
No. You're probably right. I don't know that he's going to have much more to do as like a star.
I mean, here's the thing. I was like a UCB zombie when this film came. So I knew Zach Woods' name. You know, I like did all the classes. I think got a mod team like a few months after this film came out. And it's so crazy just how everyone in this movie was supposed to be a movie star after it came out. And if anything, like Kristen Wiig's, and I think she's a genius, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, maybe one of the best films I've seen in my life. And I mean that without like that little kid hyperbole when you just see a movie. Like, honestly, one of the best comedies. Her star kind of faded after this. I don't know if, and I think it's partially because they don't make a ton of comedies. But yeah, her star faded, Paul Feig's star faded, Neil Casey didn't become a movie star. Melissa McCarthy, nothing really changed. Leslie Jones didn't become a star. Kate McKinnon should have become a star, didn't become a star. And if anything, after the Hillary Clinton piano thing, just kind of annoying me, which is not good, but whatever.
I mean, yeah, she, to some, she's now an icon of being a Hillary super fan. So I guess congrats to her.
She is very funny. She has that curse a lot of SNL people have when they become stars on SNL, but nowhere else. Where, I don't know. Maybe that piano thing maybe annoyed me too much, being a baby. They all should have become movie stars after this, but the controversy. And here's the thing. If the movie was exactly the same, made exactly the same amount of money, I think they would have still made a sequel. It would have done great in Asia. And all these people would have become just like comedy household names. Yeah.
There's three things that are going against this movie. One is the culture war, very obviously. That's the big one.
Yeah.
Two is that it's a Ghostbusters movie, because if it just wasn't a Ghostbusters movie, that was the point I was trying to make before. Like, none of us saw Zoolander 2, because who gives a shit? But like, I also never even saw like Anchorman 2 or whatever, but Anchorman was obviously like, you know, that was the only thing anyone talked about, I feel like, for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Or in real life too, when I was in college. But
still.
I guess still. So, but like, I never saw Anchorman 2. Didn't even fucking bother. Yeah. I didn't see Zoolander 2. Didn't care. I forgot that even existed, to be honest, until I saw that list just now. Yeah. So if this was just called like, you know, like
Ghost Hunters. I don't know.
Ghost Hunters or Ghost Killers or something. Like, and it was just a different thing that was not associated with a pre-existing franchise, it would have probably made more money. It probably wouldn't have attracted that culture war. It probably, to some degree, it probably would have broken through and wouldn't have had this same level of expectations, even though it was obviously flawed in every way in the production. And, you know, like the script wasn't done, obviously.
Yeah.
The story beats are a little weird. But, you know, they had many things going against them, is my point. There were like three big things. The Ghostbusters thing, the culture war, and the fact that it was, a production nightmare, it sounds like.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. If it wasn't a ghost, like... it's kind of sucks because, like, I feel like when we were kids and in the years before, this is a good criticism, I think, against, like, the, not talking much about the MCU, but it's like, reboot culture would kill original ideas, and I think an original idea would do just as well if this was something like Men in Black International, like, is another example of just, no one gave a shit, but if you're saying, oh, a movie came out, it's like, oh, I forgot his fucking name, Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson, like, fighting aliens. I think that would be an easier sell for people, and we don't do that anymore. There hasn't been a big, fun Spielberg-style family action film that I can remember coming from America in a very long time.
Super 8? Was that the last one? Spielberg style? Like, that was very Spielberg style.
Well, that was, like, even there. That was, like, almost like J.J. Abrams trying to do an art house movie. Because it was, like, almost like aping Spielberg. It isn't...
Yeah.
Here's the thing. For a truly great movie, I think you should be able to get away with making a stupid fucking trailer and still sell it. Because I don't know if you've ever seen, like, ads for The Sopranos. I think this is a good example. And The Sopranos, for me, is a show about dumbass dudes who have never thought about their feelings. The fact that they're, like, gangsters is almost secondary to why the show is good. But if you, like, watch the trailers, you'd think they were selling, like, Scarface to 12-year-olds. Like, you hear gunshots, they show all the violence, they're like, Tony makes a big deal. And if you watch the episode, that's, like, a part of it. So, you know, if you go, like, in a world where aliens are under your bed, like, that kind of thing. And, yeah, something like, I don't know, the J.J. Abrams output especially, the trailer's like, this is the most serious thing you've ever seen. I'll never look at Spock the same way.
Yeah.
So you're making a baby movie, it's okay, because I'm a baby.
I know what you mean, though. You're absolutely right about that. I mean, there's so many things that are weird and bad about... I mean, J.J. Abrams especially, but those Star Trek movies are like it's like a million worlds are at stake in every movie. You know what I mean? Like, the stakes are all over the fucking place. Yeah. And like, I don't know why they do that. And that's true in the Marvel movies as well.
Yeah.
But I think that there's just stuff that is like original ideas. You're right. Like, I, again, forgot that Men in Black movie existed till you just said that.
Yeah.
And as someone who doesn't super closely follow like alien movies or whatever, like, summer movies or movies in general, I guess is maybe the best way to put it at this point in my life. I just forget that these things even fucking exist.
Yeah.
And apparently audiences do too, but wouldn't it be better if, like, I don't know. Sometimes you see a movie that is like a new idea or a new concept or whatever, and people always have positive things to like that. That fucking Andy Samberg movie, The Groundhog Day, Palm Springs.
Oh, Palm Springs, yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun movie. I enjoyed that. And if that was called Groundhog Day 2, or it was like a Groundhog Day reboot, I think everyone would be like, this sucks. What a stupid movie.
You are not Bill Murray. You are not my favorite movie. It's like you're trying to cash in on my favorite movie. You are not that, but you force me to compare it to it.
Like, is Groundhog Day your favorite movie?
It's definitely up there. Probably top 100.
It's a really good movie.
It's great.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Like, that movie is very much the same way that Live, Die, Repeat / Tom Cruise action movie where he gets killed repeatedly.
Mission Impossible?
Edge of Tomorrow?
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow!
That movie that got a bad subtitle and then retitled on DVD or whatever.
So funny when they
retitled
it. That
movie's great. It's a good movie. That's a very fun action, kind of action comedy.
Yeah.
It's like actually pretty akin to Ghostbusters Answer the Call in a lot of respects, but it's a better movie in many ways. It's like a more well-executed action and even comedy movie probably to some degree. But that's a movie where like that was like new... It was new IP. It was existing IP, obviously, but it was like new to movies.
It was a manga, right? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. And was a really fun movie that not a lot of people saw, I guess, because it was new or whatever. But the reality is like that movie now that came out probably in 2013 or 12 or 14 or something. And that movie now, if you go back and look at it, like people can be nostalgic for that because it's a new idea. Whereas like, you're not going to be nostalgic for Zoolander 2. No one's ever going to look back on Anchorman 2 and be like, Anchorman 2, man, what a gem. I really like, that's just not a thing that happens.
Well, it's like, I think John Wick may be the most successful, like new thing. It's like very, I get notes sometimes like at my job, I do marketing stuff. I guess I can't legally say what the note is, but you can guess that John Wick is influential. Who cares? It's just to make something sound like... It's just to make a character like sound like John Wick. Just like the way you give a note to make something sound like Pikachu or whatever. Oh, my brain is mush. Nothing sounds like Pikachu. But... He says Pikachu! I don't know. I feel like there's a good way to do reboots and a bad way, and I think if you do a reboot, you should be silly, you should be light, you should be unique. But it was also just like, how many Spider-Man franchises do we really need? And it's kind of sad, because when you look at like the DNA movie makeup of a certain era, it's all starting to kind of bleed together, you know, because we're doing the same characters, we're doing the same stories, and since Lord of the Rings, we've been kind of just serving these nerd audiences, because we found out there's so much money to be had here, and I feel a backlash is probably going to be happening pretty soon. I don't know what that's going to look like, but yeah.
Alex, where did you stand on the remake of Footloose?
I don't watch that shit. I'm not going to watch a remake of a normal movie. I only watch baby movies. Don't give me. If they fuck in the movie, Alex ain't coming. Sonic the Hedgehog, front row.
There you go. I would say that you're right about that. I think the interesting thing about comic book movies and the MCU and all that is it seems shocking that it took until, 2008 or whatever for them to finally figure that out, because they had all these characters, like all this shit existed and was still very popular among like, kids and comic book nerds and stuff in the 90s, and they just couldn't figure any. I mean, some of it was probably CG not being what it should have been.
DC still hasn't figured it out because they have yet to make a good comic book movie.
I can talk about a lot. I just read the Stan Lee biography, which went into this in like detail. It was like a rights thing. Mainly.
Oh, was it? That was it. Yeah. Like Fox owns this. This is owned by this.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
Owned by Paramount.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, that's why you didn't see any X-Men. I mean, that's why it was Iron Man. It was a guy no one liked back then because they sold off all the rights to their movies to all these companies. And I don't know how they made it. It's such a risky idea, honestly, to like make all these movies in the same universe, because if one of them fails, it feels like all these dominoes fall.
That's true, but that also didn't end up ultimately mattering to some degree, because they made that Incredible Hulk movie with Ed Norton that was like not super successful.
Yeah, stinky.
And then they just were like, we'll just retcon that out of existence, and Ed Norton's not him, and we'll have Mark Ruffalo play him, and no one will ever notice her.
They had a few stinkers,
I don't know. I mean, I've only seen like six movies in that in the MCU in general, so I'm not the person to ask. But and that's because I'm deeply casual about, like, you know, I'm not a big movies guy. I'm not a big comic books guy. I'm not a big whatever the fuck guy. But like, it's fun. Like when I see those movies, like I've seen both of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Those are fun. I don't know. I'm just like, whatever. I don't care. I don't care about like any. I don't care about how much. Here's what I'll say is what is refreshing to me is. I watched the movie. You ever see that movie Prisoners, the movie with Paul Dano and Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman?
This sounds really good, but I haven't seen it.
So it's a movie about this girl who gets like a couple of girls get kidnapped by they assume by like a pedophile. And one of the dads is like a survivalist. And this is from 2009 or 10 or whatever. So it's like pre-Trump. And played by Hugh Jackman, and Jake Gyllenhaal plays a weirdo detective, and he plays weirdo so well. And this is Nightcrawler, and it's a really good movie, and it's like really well written, and it's very it goes in a different direction than you think it's going to be, and it's a hard drama for sure. It's dark and sad and creepy, but I watched that. I heard about it, and then I really like all the actors in it, and I watched it probably around like Christmas time. And I was like, damn, this was so cool. It was so nice to see like a standalone movie that was a drama that was like well executed, well written, well acted, well directed. It's just really nice to see movies that are like that as someone who's like very casual about what movies I see. And I guess that's what I'm saying is like there's just not – I feel a sense of like – and that's the same way I kind of felt about Palm Springs. I just feel like when I see a movie that I really like, I'm like, man, I really miss being like 17 and when like really weird and quirky original movies would come out all the time, because I just don't think that that's a thing anymore.
It's a bummer. Well, you get like – I don't know. You get these middle brown Marvel movies, and then the original side, you get these big artistic statements. But you don't get that, like Palm Springs is a very good middle-brow romantic comedy. And I love those. And it feels like kind of a bummer, like you're right, that we don't get these new unique ideas that like we see and they open up a little portion of our lives. And one weird thing about these reboots that you should not feel when seeing a movie is all the money and sweat and people biting their fingernails like off you know, off in the wings that if this movie fails, a small country's GDP gets, like, depleted.
Yeah.
I agree with you. One cool, like, streaming TV has some of those kinds of things.
Yeah, TV does, and that's been a big thing, like, in general. Like, I think that that's the unfortunate downside, and the thing that we've talked about without mentioning it directly or super directly on the show is, like, I've been watching The Sopranos again lately, as has the rest of the world this year. I started watching it again, like, last year and watched, like, the second half of it, like, from season three on or season four on.
Yeah.
But I bought The Sopranos Sessions, the book, and I've been reading that, and I've been rewatching. And that show's fucking great, and it is so much better than so many similar dramas that have come out, like, since 2010, which, like, anti-hero dramas and everything. It's so much better acted and directed and written. And but anyway, all this to say, there are more interesting things, I think, happening in television, or where, like, things that are not super high budget can exist and people can take bigger risks or whatever.
Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know. Yeah. It's been a fun experiment, but I don't know. My hope is that with all the networks that exist and all these streaming services, they all need new content. And, like, Netflix is doing that, like, one new movie a week thing or whatever the fuck. And hopefully there'll be some good stuff that comes out of that. I mean, if you give enough people chances, who the fuck knows what'll come out. But my only downside to things being on, and this is the thing that I've talked about, is, like, with Warner putting all their movies on HBO Max or whatever, and things coming, like, you know, skipping theaters and coming straight to streaming. The downside of that is that there's not any, it doesn't feel any different to see a movie on HBO Max or like on like HBO Max than it does to see it on any other service or any other, like, it, in some ways it's just like another, like, library of random shit where you don't know what is what. And that's like those new Netflix movies. Like, I, you know, I don't even know what the fuck, I don't even know what they are or how to find them or how to, like, you know what I mean? Like, they all just seem like more content on a service that already is overloaded with content.
Yeah, they're really depending on word of mouth. Like, Stranger Things did not get an ad push. Word of mouth is, like, kind of what brought it in, but yeah, they're not curated. I think also just movie theaters, it sucks to say this because they might not even be around in big numbers when COVID ends, but they shot themselves in the foot with the high ticket prices. You know, it's like, if movies are aimed at teens, which they are, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but you're making them prohibitive to teens if you make them expensive. Teens don't have, I didn't have a ton of money. I just think the whole, like, movie theater going experience needs to be significantly changed. The reason the MCU took over is because the way movie theaters are set up is those are the only theaters that make, those are the only movies that make money. Whereas, like, in the 1980s, you could release, like, a very horny dramedy for adults with, like, Tom Hanks or something like that, and fucking 30-year-old couples would go see it. Kids wouldn't be involved. Like, yeah, I don't, like, Dustin Hoffman becoming a movie star because he stars in, like, something like The Graduate. It's just, like, a different era when films were cheaper. I don't know what the solution is. I really don't.
Yeah.
Maybe I think
more horny movies is the, like, we need more horny films for teens and, like, young 20s. Like, we need more horny mainstream films to come out that are horny as hell and that people can just enjoy and go see and be horny about.
It's been a while since there's been, like, an American Pie kind of movie.
It is kind of funny because, like, I think culture in the 90s was way too horny. And then there were, like, Girls Gone Wild ads, like, during the Daily Show.
Yeah, like, on TV.
Yeah.
Like on Comedy Central and stuff all the time.
You saw a drunk girl lift her shirt, and then you think back, they're like, huh. So we also saw something very illegal every night trying to, like, watch Kenny do his thing. Yeah, that guy's in jail now. But I think culture swung too far in the other direction, where you have, like, these movies aimed at children that are watched and enjoyed by everyone. And
Yeah. And there's nothing adult, like, about, like, there's nothing, like, even, like, WandaVision is a show where I've found that to be enjoyable. I mean, I don't have any.
Yeah.
Like, I said that, I read the first few weeks, people being like, oh, you're a rube if you like the show, that sort of thing. And I made a tweet where I was like, this is pretty fun. Like, I'm just enjoying watching this show. I find it enjoyable. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever written, but I'm finding it enjoyable to watch. But the thing about that show is, even saying that, is, like, that's a very sexless show. There's nothing like, it's not written for adults, if that makes sense. Even though it's, like, ostensibly a drama, it's not written or directed at adults.
It's,
as you're saying, it's directed at, like, 17-year-olds, at oldest, right?
Yeah. Kurt Vonnegut and Grant Morrison had a, you know, I'm a comic book writer, and I think about this quote, and this is definitely the audience that I want to reach and try to reach, is smart teenagers. You know, like, that's the audience that keeps comic books going. That's definitely the audience that keeps Rick and Morty going. Is, like, super smart teenagers. And WandaVision, I think, is aimed at, like, smart teenagers. It's aimed at teenagers who maybe feel uncomfortable viewing sex, which didn't used to be the case, but that is, you know, I'm an adult. What the fuck do I know, you know? But it is definitely for smart teenagers who want to talk about the concept of, like, grief and postmodernism, but want to do it through these baby characters they love.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's been a weird swing these last few years, and yeah. I think it didn't all begin with Ghostbusters Answer the Call, but certainly this has informed a lot of what's happened. So we're getting towards the end of the show here. Yeah. Alex, do you have anything you'd like to plug this week?
Hey, if you're buying comic books in June, go buy Rick's New Hat number one. I'm plugging something way ahead of time. I got a new Rick and Morty series coming out.
It's only going to be like 2 months ahead of time, so it's not even that way ahead of time.
Right. Oh, it's coming out in April? Cool. Yes, all right.
April of Alex's.
Fucking, if you run a comic book store, you cancel all your X-Men orders, put all that money into Rick's New Hat number one. It's a fake event comic I'm doing with Fred Stressing. I hope it's funny. I'm still writing it. We'll see what happens. I hope it's funny. I'll be the best! That's me plugging myself. All right, I'm done.
Okay, great. Where can they find you on Twitter?
Oh, at Alex Fear. F-I-R-E-R.
That's how you spell that.
My name should be in the copy for this podcast.
Yeah, it'll be in the copy. I'll get it in there, but yeah. I might spell it wrong. I might spell it F-I-R-E.
That's fine. Twitter sucks ass. I'm over Twitter just like everyone else. Don't follow me on Twitter.
That's how the kids honestly say his name. They call him Alex Fire.
Alex Fire. Yeah, just buy Bird Person number one.
Because he's lit.
Yeah, I'm lit. Great. That's what kids say.
You're not registering when you talk. So I'm going to plug Cy. He's at Cy Fieri. I'm at Chidspin. The podcast is at Rounding Down. Of course, if you want to donate a sewer, $ Rounding Down on the Cash App. Also, we're still technically, I guess, in some way sponsored by Yellowbird Hot Sauce, yellowbirdfoods.com. If you want to get any of their hot sauces, feel free. Pick up that the
Aaron Crow.
Feeds it. Aaron Crow, Max Lee, Gabriel Umazark. It's great. You can get that. And also pick up Mansions, our friends Mansions. They put out that record, Big Bad, great record. Get it, mansions.bandcamp.com, a great record, my favorite. So, of course, for Alex Fuhrer, for Cy, for myself, for Ghostbusters Answer the Call, for Boston, as always.
This was a Buzzcast Network production. Bow.